Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. My name is Stan B., and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Saraville Victories Group in New Jersey, the best group in AA. And I bring you greetings. I happen to be Polish, as your leader had said. And ain't wrong too bad with that. My mother and father were both Polish. So that fit in pretty good. And we're doing pretty good, us Poles, anymore. You know, we got a Polish Pope. And that stopped a lot of Polish jokes real quick. Now, if you listen to your television and your news, you'll find that we're going to have a chief of staff that's Polish. Don't fret, though. George Washington was also a Polak. Who else would stand up in a rowboat, right? And my God, you sound like a good group. You're the best-looking bunch of sick people I ever saw. How about that? I'm an alcoholic, and I have a disease. I have a disease called alcoholism. Mental obsession with a physical compulsion. That's something. It's a disease that'll rob you of everything that you ever had in your life. And you'll never get it back unless you come to these rooms. You know, this disease is a little bit like this internal revenue we have to deal with sometimes. Yeah. Reminds me of a story where three men went to the internal revenue office. And a janitor came out pushing the broom and he said, this guy you got in here today is tough. He's taking everything away from everybody. Well, them three fellas are standing there and they don't have much to give. Well, the first fella goes in and he comes out. He lost his jacket. No jacket, no tie. Next fella goes in and comes out and there he's standing with just a pair of slacks on. And I said to the third fella, he said, holy mackerel, that guy's tough. He's taking everything away. He says, boy, I really owe him. Wait till I get in there. Well, in he went and he comes out naked. Well, he got a little patch on his front and he got a little patch on his back. And the second fellow says, boy, they really did a job on you. He says, yeah. They took my money, they took my clothes, and they cut off my water and they shut off my... No, they cut off my gas and shut off my water. So this will shut off your gas and turn off your water. You'll lose everything like I did. I came into the program a young man, and you know something? I got old in AA. And what better way is there? I'm getting old, and I'm getting fat, and I'm enjoying every bit of it. And don't tell me it's not great, because I come in here to live. I didn't come in here to die. If you come in here to die, my friend, try again, because there's something missing. I love it. I came into the program a young man, and but for the grace of God, the first day I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I stayed. I stayed and I never went out that door. Why? Because I had a good sponsor. I had a good sponsor. I had a good co-sponsor. I had a good group. There were no rehabs at that time. There was nobody could go to a rehab. When we got a new man, we couldn't take him to a hospital or a rehab. I remember the hospital saying, take that drunken bum somewhere else. We got room for people that are sick. And there was no place to go. And we brought them to our homes and we brought them onto our porches. And we sat them on our swings on the porches. And we fed them and we washed them. And we combed their hair and took them to meetings. And we sat them down and we put a lot of time in these guys. And by God, this guy was going to stay sober whether he liked it or not. I was afraid as a young man to relate my story to the old timers. There were no people 28 years old in Alcoholics Anonymous. There were three of us in a neighborhood in the state of New Jersey. One fellow was 30 years old, had 5 years of sobriety. The other fellow was 29. We didn't know about the things that you old timers were talking about. We don't remember the bathtub gin. We don't remember sliding the door open. Joe sent me. We didn't remember that. We wanted to talk about the Staten Island where you could go and at 18 years you could be a big shot and drink. You know, nobody ever told me to stop drinking. With the exception of a young priest. And I don't remember if anybody ever told you to stop drinking completely. I remember going to this priest. I was an altar boy. I was a good boy. I happened to be Catholic and Yankee. And boy, I don't stand a chance around here. And I served Mass with this priest. And I never forget this man used to say to me, Stanley, clean up. Man, I cleaned them cherubits right out. Boy, there was nothing left. And I went to this man because, you know, my mother said to me when I came back from the service, there's something wrong with you that isn't with the other people. Go see Father Mack. And Father Mack will talk to you. In my hometown, if you're Polish, as long as you work, you're all right. You can do anything. Fight with mama, kick the dog. As long as you went to work, you're all right. I went to see Father Mack, and the first thing Father Mack says, he says, what's the problem? Are you working? I said, sure. He said, so what could be wrong? I said, my mother thinks I drink too much. He said, so quit. Common sense? Oh, yeah. Common sense. So quit. Nobody ever told me to quit until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, they had formulas like the gentleman said the other night. They had formulas for me. They would say, your problem is you should drink at home. Bring it home and drink. Then you won't get into trouble. Take your wife with you. She'll watch over you so you don't get involved with those guys. Little did she know that I was the ringleader of those guys. And I was the guy who was taking them. I was the type of drinker that would disappear for 6, 8, 9, 10 days. I went for a loaf of bread 9 days later, come back with the bread, mind you. That damn thing was under my arm. I slept with it. I drank with it. I came back and I laid on the table. That big nick in it. But I brought it home. A friend of mine, his wife said, you know, I'll fix you guys. I'll sell the liquor to you at home. Why should you go into gin mills and spend all that money? And at that time, we'd get a good shot for 35 cents. She was selling the liquor for 60. She wasn't so stupid. You know, in 2 years, she had enough money. She left the bum and she went off on her way. But nobody ever said to me, so quit drinking. If I would have listened to this man when he told me to quit drinking, I would have been ahead of the game. I was age 24. I was just discharged from the Marine Corps. I was back at my old job at Johnson Johnson, the Band-Aid people. I had 7 years seniority. I was the shop steward. I was going to Rutgers Union and Management School. I was married. I had two beautiful daughters. I bought myself a little house with the white picket fence. I furnished it completely and parked a brand new Chrysler in a driveway at age 24. And I say to you, my alcoholism didn't run, it galloped. Because at 28, anytime I walked in a room and there was a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I identified. Right from the beginning, right from the hustle, I knocked to get into a nut house. We didn't have any, like today we have the rehabs, we had nut houses. We had a place called Marlboro. And by George, there's a big sign in front of that place now, New Hope. A center for better living. When I went there, there was no hope. There were people that were very sick. It was a nut house. They had two floors. One was nuts and one was nutsier. That's what they called it. And I got in there and I knocked and a woman doctor came to the phone and wouldn't let me in. And I argued to get into this nut house. And she let me in and she was a Russian doctor and she talked Polish and she was talking to her husband who was also a doctor. He said, let this Polak bum sign in. But don't let him sign out. And they sent me right to the nutsier floor. And I was drunk when I was in. I was drunker than the Lord. And you know, after 2 days, I was sober. And they weren't. There were some sick people up there. I saw this gentleman and he's jumping. And he's jumping. He's jumping for a day and a half. He's jumping. And I said, my God, I said, to the one fellow, what's he doing? He said, he's jumping over puddles. I said, puddles? I said, I don't see no water. I don't see no puddles. He said, oh, that's because you're new. Woo! That's because I'm new. He said, yeah. He said, you got to be around here for a couple of weeks. He says, when you're around for two, three weeks, you see a waterfall in that corner. And a water comes in this place and fills the whole place up with water. Then he said, we open the windows and the sun comes in and dries the floor and leaves the puddles. And we had them paper slippers. You remember, guys? And he don't want to get his paper slippers wet. You know, I sat there and almost believed that guy. The doctor said to me, Stanley, you got too much time. We got to give you a little bit. We got to give you something to do or give me some occupational therapy. Damn, I didn't know that was work. But they put me in a butcher shop. And I walked into this butcher shop And I said to one man, I said, who are inmates and who ain't? And the guy said, they're all inmates. I said, they all got cleavers. You got to be kidding. wasn't about to stay there. And I went in front of the board. You used to have to face the board at that time. And I stood there, and these men asked me questions. Like, did you learn anything? I said, yeah, I learned not to come back here. That's what I learned. Nobody said a thing about alcoholism. And they told me that you'll be back. And I said, not this guy. I may be back somewhere, but I won't be back here. Lo and behold, with tongue in cheek, here I come in one of them jackets with no sleeves. About 7 months later, and they threw me into a cell, one of them that's padded on all four sides and the ceiling. And I remember like today, and I always bring it up because I remember running up the wall. Believe it or not, I knew I couldn't run up the wall, but I ran up the wall. And I fell, and I picked myself up, and I ripped my clothes off, and I remember bleeding, and I remember wiping the blood. And I remember the attendants, four at a time, coming in and grabbing me by all fours and stabbing me with needles. And I did this for about 9 or 10 days. And you know, they let me out. I went in front of those same people, and they told me to go home. I was all right. And instead of making a right turn at the hospital, I made a left, and I got home drunk. I had automobiles in this period of time. I had 9. And the same guy got them all, believe it or not. I'd pick up the phone and say, Harry, this is Stan. He'd say, where is it? He didn't even ask me what happened. Where is it? I'll go get it. Because I hit everything. I hit cars. I hit trucks. I hit poles. I backed into things. I hit a guy on a ferry boat in New York. Then I run out and ask him where he's going. He was standing still. I drove through a wall in Staten Island, New York, in a dry cleaning shop right up to the counter. And I remember saying to the man, he says, the man said to me, he says, would you mind moving that out so I can open for business? I said, man, you already opened. What's the matter with that? Real wise guy. Right here in Swansboro, North Carolina, I hit a pig. Man, I hit a 400-pound sow, and it went up in the air. I never forget it. And little piglets come flying out. And man, I don't know if she had them when I hit her or she had them when she came across the street, but there she was. And here comes this old North Carolina state trooper, and he's giving me a big, long spiel. He says, you want the pig, you can have it. Here I am at Camp Lejeune. I couldn't bring that pig back to the base. Here I am with a pig that wasn't mine. I was driving a car that wasn't mine, and I was with a woman that wasn't mine. I was in trouble. In my hometown, I hit a train. 1 o'clock in the morning, I come down, and whacko, I hit a train. I go to court. The judge looks at me. He was a Polish judge. He knew me since I was that big. And he says to me, Stasiu's Polish for Stanley. Stasiu, he says, get yourself a lawyer. He says, the railroad brought 3. He says, they had no business running a train at 1 o'clock in the morning. And that was true. It was a place where they didn't. I said, I don't need a lawyer, Your Honor. I said, I know what happened. I can tell you. I don't need a lawyer to tell you. And I could see where he postponed it a few times. And he would say things like, maybe it was foggy. I said, oh no, full moon out, Your Honor. It was a beautiful night. Maybe you didn't have any brakes. No, just passed inspection. Finally, he got so aggravated with me, he said, maybe you didn't see the train. Little lawyer jumped up from the railroad and says, Your Honor, he hit the 44th car. What do you mean he didn't see the train? He says, 44 cars went by. Things started to get bad. Now I'm not paying my mortgage. Now I'm losing my job. Now I'm running out of alcohol, and because I run out of alcohol and there's no more bottles in the cellar to hock in for the deposit, I make a great big concoction of rubbing alcohol and club soda and went wild. Pick up a couple of razors and slip my wrists good, and I put my shirt on today, and like I always do, I look at it and I see stitches today, and I look and I say, thank God, you saved me for something. I thank God it's for this. And my little daughter, little bitty thing, got up 4 o'clock in the morning, woke up, went to the neighbor, the guts of that kid. And later on you'll see why she's so special. And they called an ambulance and they saved me. Things were getting bad. Somebody said to my father, you know, Stasiu wasn't like that before he went to Korea. Something happened to him in Korea. The Marine Corps did it. Go to see the Marine Corps. Well, by George, the Marine Corps said, go see a shrink. So we went to see a doctor. The man says, I need shock treatment. And I don't know if some of you remember the old time shock treatment. It's not like today. Not like today. You walk in and they put a needle in your arm and a sponge in your mouth. And they bzit you. And you come out of there like this. This guy bzit me 16 times. And 17's my lucky number. And I say, before he bzits me again, I'm going to find out what he's trying to do to me. And he said, Stan, I'm going to try to make you forget everything you ever did that made you drink, and then some. Everything I did didn't bother me, but the then some gave me some trouble. And I wouldn't let him zit me no more. And I went on. I lost that house. I lost that family. I lost the kids. And everybody around me knew what I was doing. But nobody ever mentioned to me that I should quit drinking. They all gave me these special formulas. And one day I walked into my gin mill, my favorite gin mill, and lo and behold, the barmaid said, Stan, have your drink and please leave, because we don't want your kind around here. You know, I didn't know what kind I was. I really didn't. I didn't know that I was different. I didn't know that anyone noticed that I was different. Oh, we're different, all right. If in this room, I am the alcoholic, and I need somebody to drink with, I'll bet you before the night is over, I'll find the two that are alcoholics. And I left. And I realized then that I was not drinking like I was. Now I was drinking out of necessity. I was drinking because I had to drink. I had to drink to go to work. I had to drink to face people. And since I wasn't their kind, I'm going to go where I should be. I landed up on Mulberry Street in Newark. The Skid Row of Newark, New Jersey. And I'll never forget, I was there for 2 days, and the men came and escorted me to Broaden Market, and they said, kid, that way, and don't come back. They kicked me off Mulberry Street. That wasn't the end for me. I continued. I landed up on 3rd Avenue, New York. And most of you probably know where it's at, and you probably heard stories about the Bari. But I'll tell you, I can talk to you till 11 o'clock tonight. And it won't make any difference. Of course, it's just like you see on television. We did the same things. I was one of the youngest fellas there. I stood on corners because I was always healthy. And the truckers would come and I would unload their trucks for $3 and a bottle of wine. And they would stand and watch. I'd go down to Orchard Street where they used to have the flea markets. And I'd bring out all their clothes and put them on the sidewalks for the sales. And then come back at night and put them back in the stores. And they loved me because I worked like crazy. It's $3 and a bottle of wine. I worked for Sammy Fuchs and Sammy's Folly, some of you might have heard. That's the place where you have to be 65 or you can't perform. It's an all-timer group. They're all stars. They come in there. And I was in charge of the fellas there. When the great tours came in, I made sure all the drunks were out. And when all the drunks were out and the great tours were gone, we took all the beers that was left. A half a bottle here, a bottle here. And we take it in the big room and we take the Budweiser with the Schlitz and the Schlitz with the Arnold and mix it and stir it up and have a ball. That was living. That was living. I made a lot of friends on the Bari, and one of the friends that I had made is very important in my life. He was a dentist from Detroit. A man who was not a doctor. Or was not a, maybe not a doctor either. A man who was not an alcoholic. He was on the Bari for 7 years. One day his wife had asked him if his socks and his tie matched his suit. And he said, the hell with this noise. And he lived in a Pioneer Hotel. And every week he got money from home. And that's why he was my good friend, because I loaned money off him. And I'd pay him back. My credit was always good. It was August. And I came to Phil and said, I need $10. I need a drink bad. And Phil said, no, no more. That's it. I said, Phil, you've been taking care of me for 7 months. What's wrong now? He says, I can't do it. And he walked away. He walked away. I ran down to 21st Street, and it didn't take me long. Stuck out my arm and sold a pint of blood and came back with the $5 and waved it at him. And said, you see, I don't need you. And 2 weeks later, I needed that man. Because I was there on my hands and knees, this time begging for $5. And the man said, no more. So I ran to 8th Avenue this time. Gave him the other hand. Sold another pint of blood. Came back and waved it at him, and he put his arm around me. And he said, Stan, he said, sit down. I don't know what your problem is. And he says, I don't know what's wrong with you. He sees that you seem like a pretty intelligent guy. You get along with people. You seem to have a lot of fun. You're always ready for a joke. I don't know what's wrong with you. I know you got a wife and family. He said, I got $18 in my pocket. I'll give you these $18 if you promise to go home and see your wife and family. And ladies and gentlemen, for $18, I'd have stood on my head. For $18, I'd have done just about anything. I took those $18 and I ran. I ran out to the highway and I got a ride from a trucker. And he brought me to New Brunswick, to the old circle. And he said, this is where you get off, kid. 2 miles down the road and you're home. Good luck. And I turned around and looked at him in the cab and I said, where are you going? He said, why? I says, well, I don't know. He says, get off here and go. And he says, I'm going to Philadelphia. I says, well, hell, I ain't been in Philadelphia in a long time. You see, I still had $18 in my pocket. And I was ready to go. I got to Philadelphia and he opened the door and he said to me, you know, kid, he said, I thought you were a little bit different than the rest of them. He said, but you're scum just like the rest of them. He said, you're a bum. I'll never forget that. And I walked out in the streets of Vine Street. And after the $18 was gone, I knew only one thing to do. That was walk into Bad Bank because some man was talking about it to me. 12th and Race. And this place, ladies and gentlemen, was a filthy mess. It was a crime. What they were taking from... As long as you were standing, they took it. And I gave him a pint of blood and I walked out and I fell. Right smack in the middle of the street. And I remember an Irish cop coming by and had a big brogue and a big Irish face. And he said, you drunken bum, sober up and get off my beat. And I resented that because I wasn't drunk yet. I just got my $6. I just got my shot of brandy. And he dragged me, literally dragged me. I could feel my feet hitting the curb. And he put me in an alley and he left me. And to this day, folks, I don't know whether I was there a day, six, or how many. But I do remember that when I came around, I couldn't see. It was a blur. And when I started to listen, I couldn't hear. I couldn't move. And I started to yell, and absolutely nothing came out. And I was scared. And I remember that my teacher, the nun in my Catholic school, said to me, Stasio, if you're ever in that spot, pray to St. Joseph for a happy death. And you know, I prayed to my Maker. And I tried to make my amends. And I wondered what I was doing there in that position. What have I ever done in life that warrants this spot? Laying here paralyzed without even able to move. And I said, God, if I only had one more shot. And you know, I didn't smell. I mean, I didn't hear or I didn't see. But I smelled something that was familiar. You know, we alcoholics stink. We got a stench about us. And we wonder sometimes, you walk in the front door and the wife's in the kitchen, she says, you've been drinking. How the heck she know I've been drinking? We stink. Even a good shower don't take care of that sometimes. And man, what I smelled was the best smell I ever smelled. These guys were right. I'm telling you, they were right. And I raised my head to God and I said, thanks for helping me. Because if they stink as bad as I do, guess what? They had to be my friends. And you know, there's two men. Never saw me in their lives. You talk about one alcoholic loving another. Never saw me. Didn't know where I came from, what I was going to do to them after they picked me up. They literally took me and put me in a shelter. They went out and they stole bread from a bakery. And they dipped the bread in a bakery, in a muscatel, their muscatel. And they fed me like a little baby. And after a period of time, I got up and I walked and I talked and I heard. And what did I do? I ran to the hock shop. You see, I had one possession left in my life, a wristwatch that Dad gave me for graduation. And I hocked it and I got $22. A lot of money for a hock shop. I went and I took these two men and I sat in a bar. And for whatever reason, I call it the last sane moment of my insane life. I did not want to be where he was at 55 and this guy was at 56. I don't know what it was. Call it a miracle. I call it an unexplained and unexpected event. Because I left the bar. I jumped out into the street, in the old Vine Street. And as I was falling, my hand went up in the air like that. And a fellow in a little Volkswagen came by and thought I was hitchhiking. He said, kid, where are you going? I said, I think I'm going to Jersey. Hop in. And by George, I hopped in and he drove me 5 miles from home. Now here I come, the big hero in my little town. I was a high school football player. I was the basketball. I was mayor of town during youth week. Everybody knew the little boy that father was a shoemaker. Now I'm walking down the street, folks, and the people that knew me and talked to me so much are crossing the street to get away from me and talking about me. But I had no fear because I was going to see Mom. And if you're the oldest Polish son and your name is Stasia, you're still king of the road. And I walked in there, Mom grabbed the broom and she wailed the hell out of me. She beat me up so bad I still feel it. And it's embarrassing because Mom is only 4'11 and weighs 80 pounds. She said, get out of here, because if Pop ever come home, he'd throw the both of us out. For the next few weeks, I slept in the dugouts at McWilliams Stadium in Perth Amboy. And it was getting cold. It was September, so I came back and I said, Mom, you got to do something. She said, I'll tell you what you do. She said, you go find your family, find your wife. Then come back and call this Society for Drinkers that I read about in a Polish magazine put out by the Franciscan missionaries. There was a priest that had a problem. Now he's sober and he's all right. And I said, great, he's got God on his side. Who have I got? And I went to look for my family, and it took me 4 days to go 6 miles, drinking in between. And I found them in a dilapidated building that it was a disgrace. I've always worked with my hands. I've decorated homes, wallpapered, painted cars, and here they were. And my Chrissy was telling me that if you walk on a second floor, don't have cereal in the morning because the flakes are going to be in it. That's where I put those three beautiful girls. And they were on state aid, and they asked me to leave. And I was walking out the door, and as I walked out the door and already down, my oldest daughter, the one that saved me from the cut wrists, came and pulled on my trousers. And she said, Daddy, did you forget that today is my birthday? September the 30th, 1959, we celebrate together, and Daddy hasn't touched a drink since. That's been... I went home and I called that number, Bigelow 21515, the old intergroup number. Man picked up the phone and he says, hiya kid, who you calling for? He thought I was a little young, I guess. I said, I'm calling for myself. I think Mom says I might have a problem. So he says, just a minute. And Mom was standing right there with the broom. She was waiting. And the man says, we're a little busy. I said, Mom, I said, they're busy. And she said, whack, whack, wait till they get on busy. She whacked me a few times. And I waited till I got on busy. Because a man by the name of Tom Delaney, some of you might know Jerry Delaney, by George you do. And it was Tom was in a group chairman at that time. And he's talked to me. And he said, if you're doing nothing, he says, come out and meet me in Newark. And I went and I met Tom. And I spent a couple days with Tom. And my first impression of, I know the first impression of Alcoholics Anonymous, I walked out of the Clinton Avenue office and I saw a car. I like big cars. I like big Cadillacs. I like big Lincolns. And I went up and I saw this car sitting there. It was a 1957 Plymouth with the big things on the back. And it was the typical alcoholic car. No headlight. Back window cracked. Seats ripped. Cigarette holes. You name it. Door smashed out. Half window up, half window down. And I went right for that car. And Tom says, oh, no. No, this is my car. And there stood a big white Lincoln. And I said, wow, this must be the car that they use to take you around to impress you. And I thought of that when Don picked me up in his Cadillac. I said, man, they impress you down here too, you know. He said, no, he says, we rode it a little bit. And he said to me, he says, you know, and this isn't my car. And I said, I figured that. He said, this is my wife's. Mine's in the garage getting fixed. I got the same kind. And I said, is she in AA too? He says, oh, yeah. And I said, man, I'm going to get me one of these. What do you have to do? First impression of AA. Gave me a meeting book. Told me to go home and wait. Told me to go home and wait and somebody will come to get me. I'm sure there's a few of you here that remember when 12-step and their 12-step calls, what they were like years ago. You got a phone from the intergroup office. And you didn't wait like you wait today till maybe tomorrow. Or maybe later on, or whenever you had a chance. You see, the bottoms were different then. And when an alcoholic called the intergroup office, that was probably the last thing he ever wanted to do. Because, you know, it was not a disease then. It was a disgrace. And God forbid if you had a son. God forbid if you had a father. God forbid if you had a husband that was an alcoholic. Call him a bum? Fine. Call him a drunk? Fine. That's acceptable. But God forbid, don't call him an alcoholic. And we went. We went immediately. We went as soon as we can. I remember coming into a home and a man fell on a... got off of the bath, the bowl in the toilet and fell on a radiator. Hot radiator. We smelt it as soon as we came in the door. And we got there too late. And my own friend, the drummer, a good friend of mine, we broke his door down only to find a hole in his head and a gun in his lap. Because we got there too late after they called. And they didn't come for me. I waited Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and nobody came. And I was ready to get drunk. God, I was ready to get drunk. There was a gin mill, Larry Kryinsky's, right on the corner. And I was gone. I put my coat on 2-3 times. Mom came to me. She said, you know, I prayed to you for the St. Anthony for you for 8 years. St. Anthony's the patron of lost things. I prayed that you could find yourself in life. Do me a favor. Call once more and then go. Well, lo and behold, I called. And who do you think was on the other end of the line? Tom Delaney, with the unexpected and unexplained events, was changing fluorescent lights in the intergroup office. And he said, kid, how are you? I said, fine. He said, you make any meetings? I said, no. Why not? Nobody came to get me. Ho, ho, ho. He says, who took you by your little hand and took you to the gin mill? Real sarcastic. And I even said to him, I said, is this Tom? You know, I thought it was a different guy. He said, yeah, this is Tom. He says, you know something else, kid? He said, I thought you Polacks had some guts. He said, you're a chicken to go to a meeting. I said, who the hell are you calling chicken? Boom! That was the end. I didn't need you people for what? For somebody to talk to me like that? I didn't even know that guy. But I couldn't go. Whatever he said, whatever he did, I couldn't get that door open to go out and drink. The next morning, my mother woke me. And she said, come on, young man, we're going to church. 6:30 in the morning. And I walked down this old path to my mom, and we went to church, and we prayed. We prayed together, and that night I looked in the meeting book. And I went to a meeting place where I was very familiar with. I played basketball in the auditorium many times. And I ran around downstairs many times. And I stood on the corner because I was 2 hours early. And they would say to me, you're looking for A? Oh, no, 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 I'm waiting for my sister, you know. God forbid AA. And one man came and he said, you know, kid, he said, the trolley don't stop here no more. You might as well come on down. I said, okay, but I ain't coming this way. I know a back way. He says, whatever way suits you, you know. So I went all the way around. And I walked in the door over there. It was a big meeting. We had about 200 people. The podium was here. And I walked in and I looked around and I said, oh my Lord, what did my mother do to me now? But then again, I said, it can't be. Everybody's old and everybody's dressed. Everybody's laughing and having a good time. This can't be Alcoholics Anonymous. And I turned around and I left. And a man saw me and he ran after me. A fellow by the name of Pete. And he stuck out his mitt, like the man said Friday night and the other fellow this morning. He stuck out his head and he said, welcome. He didn't ask me who I was or where I came from or what I wanted. He said, welcome. And you know something? My hand has never been shook like that again. He brought me in front and got me a cup of coffee and he said, I don't belong to this group. Those two fellas do. And I looked. 61, 56. Here comes Einstein, 28. I sat right between them. And a 56-year-old, the first thing I started to mumble something, he poked me in the ribs and he said, shut up, listen. Never saw the man. And he says to me, he says, you must be new. And I said, gee, these guys are brilliant. Oh, they're smart. They figured it right out. You know, this ain't Weight Watchers where they can tell. And he says to me, he said, since you're new, you probably don't have a sponsor. And I said, what's that? He said, you got one. And that's how we got sponsors. They used to meet us at the door and say, you knew, yep, you have a sponsor? Nope, you got one now. Not like today. You know, today they beg, they borrow, they ask. Then when they get them, they fire them. Sometimes they lay him off for a while till he gets better, then I'll take him back. I think the best one is when they outgrow their sponsor. He don't understand my feelings. All of a sudden we got feelings. This man saved my life. This man was also a Phil. He was my eyes. He told me what to do. He said, "You want this program?" I said, "I don't know. I don't even know what this is. My mother sent me here." I heard my first speaker, and he was a man from Virginia. And he had a draw. Oh, man, he talked funny. And he says, "About this and about that," and I didn't know what he was talking about. I thought maybe they brought him over here to talk to me or something. But then he told a story. He was in this Irish town, and he said, "Maybe I'll get away with a Polish story." He told a story about the little Polish boy who got a new car. He got this new car, and by Lord, he took all his friends for a ride, and the rain came. And the car slipped and turned over. And the policeman came. He says, "This your car?" And the little Polish boy says, no, my car." He says, "I got him a car." He says, "But I got wheels on the bottom. This one got wheels on top." And I roared. I laughed so hard I couldn't understand what I was. Everybody stopped laughing, and I was laughing. And I was the only guy who was Polish. But you know, I realized after that meeting, for the first time in my life, I laughed from in here. And boy, I felt good. Maybe I belong. They told me, "You want to make meetings? Be on the corner." Not like today, you know. "Oh, so you shouldn't get wet. I'll pick you up right at the door, okay?" The door, my foot, they said, "Be on a corner." That corner was 7.5 miles from home. I know, I clocked it. I walked it. And there I stood on this corner, waiting for somebody to pick me. I didn't know who was going to pick me up. I didn't know where they were going to take me. My mother used to say, "Stashu, what the hell kind of outfit you get into?" You know? You walk for 7 miles, you stand on a corner, you don't know who's going to pick you up, you don't know where they're going to take you, then you come home and you don't know where you've been. What kind of outfit you in? But I didn't have to wait on corners too much, because I got a car. Oh, my Lord, I got a car. I went to my boss. It was a Jewish man. I was painting then. I said, "Boss, I'm going to get myself a car. You won't have to pick me up no more." I said, "But I'm a little short." He said, "How short are you?" I said, "I need $70. "Oh, that ain't bad." He reached in his pocket, and I walked away, real jumpy, you know. And he said, "Stan, wait. By the way, how much is the car?" "90. $90. I got myself a 1949 Buick. And those of you that remember that, Rosemary, they were tanks. And had three colors. The original black, the gray, the primer gray, and the primer red. And what an automobile that turned out to be. First place I went was to an AA meeting. And I got into Jersey, and I was going to Jersey City, and I got on a Pulaski Skyway. And in case some of you don't know, that's the Polack's way to heaven. And I got on that Skyway, and there was only one problem. I was going the wrong way. And I got to the bottom of the hill. There's a little booth there with a policeman in there. And he came out and he threw up his hands. He blew his whistle and he screamed. He says, "Hold it, where do you think you're going?" I said to George, "George, I don't think I better tell him." He says, "Where do you think you're going?" I said, "We're going to Hudson County Jail." He says, "Going? You ought to be in it." He says, "What are you going to do now?" He says, I'm going to an AA meeting." He said, "AA meeting?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You know Charlie Ashbeck?" I said, "I sure do." He said, "Why the hell did you say so?" Stopped all the traffic. Waited. My man, this AA thing works, you know. It was a good car for me. I parked it in front of the bank one night. And the bank president's daughter backed into me. And you know these tanks. I went out there, got the old hammer and the rubber softball. I banged it out, and the father called. And he said, you know, Mr. Price, we don't want no trouble. How much is it? I'll pay the damages. And I said, oh, about $120. Next day, here comes a check, $120. 4 months later now, I'm down ashore, and a lawyer's daughter hits me. Now, you got to remember, I got 4 more months of sobriety. And when he called, $260. I'd like you to know that I drive a Cadillac today. After 19 months of running, my sponsor said to me, we're going to get to work. I said, what are you talking about? Now we're going to get to work. I've been on this, what we used to call frantic sobriety. Didn't have time to get drunk. I was in 3 states one time, and it was only Wednesday. And we were running. And he says to me, we're going to go and do some steps. 19 months. Now, there's a reason for that, and I don't tell you to do it this way. But I was sick. You see, we sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous, because of the rehabs, we forget that there's a physical part of this disease. And some of us are sick physically. And I was sick physically. It took me a long time to get better, for my mind to start working the way it should. He knew when I was ready. He put me on a 6-hour program. I couldn't do 24 hours. 6 hours. He used to, at 6 o'clock in the morning, I'd be going to work and I'd call him. At noon. He used to love to call me at noon because I got a Polish mother. And if you know what goes in a Polish lunch bag, oh, brother. And he'd say, what do you got for lunch, Stan? Man, I'd have pork chop sandwiches, spaghetti sandwiches, potato sandwiches, anything was left over from last night, I had in the bag. So that was our talk. But I didn't realize that he was making me laugh and he was making me feel good. Eventually, I graduated, you know, to a 24-hour program. And he took me to a step meeting that consisted of 12 men and 12 steps, 12 weeks. And you know, I learned the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned that the steps that we learn about in these rooms are not done in these rooms. We do the steps when we walk out the door. We practice those principles out there. We don't be nice to our fellow man and then go home and kick the kid because they left the toy in our way. And he told me about the first step. And he said, I took that first step backwards. You see, you had to show me through identification that I was an alcoholic, and only then would I admit. And the second step, I had no problem with that. And the third step, he made very easy for me. Because he said, don't worry about a flash of lightning, because you're not going to get one. Don't think you're going to wake up in the morning and it's going to be raining, and you're going to say, oh my God, here it is. That ain't going to happen. God's will for you, and God, your will, is to drink. And since you're an Alcoholics Anonymous, God's will must be for you to stay sober. It was that simple. And I got into the fourth step, and I never forget him saying, what are you doing? Don't be doing a character. Don't be working on a character VT defects that you don't have. What do you mean I don't have? He says, work on a character defects that you have. Just because it's listed doesn't mean that you have it. That's true. He said, work on anger. Work on ego. I said, ego? I got enthusiasm. No ego. I did my fifth step and I worked the rest of the steps. At 7 weeks of sobriety, they asked me to speak. My sponsor came to me and said, kid, if you can talk up there, like you're talking back at a car, we got a speaker. And you know, if you put 3 sentences together, they signed you right up. You were there. Things were different. If you had a car, they thought you stole it. You know, if you weren't in jail, they wonder what you're doing there. So I said, well, Phil, oh, I'll speak if you find me a group to suit me, you know, get me a special group. He says, what kind of group would you like, Stan? I said, well, you know, give me a group with a lot of painters, carpenters, masons. And you're probably not familiar with the area. You people from Jersey might, but they took me to Upper Montclair. I mean, this is pretty elite. You gotta be voted in this place. I'll tell you, it's an elite place. And there isn't a painter in Upper Montclair. And I walked in that room, and they didn't have chairs like this. They had sofas and easy chairs. They hired a man to make their coffee, and they hired a man to clean up. They just came. And this woman came with a gown on, black gown. I'll never forget it. And she said, "Welcome." And she handed me a cup. Not one of these cheap paper jobs, China. And had a saucer underneath. And you talk about class, it matched. Same set. And I said, "You want me to speak here?" He said, "Yep." I said, "Not me." And I ran out of the building. And old Phil, he was crippled. He had a cane and he caught me. And he brought me back. And he said, "Wasn't it Tuesday that you said within reason you'll do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous?" I said, "Yeah, you're right. Within reason." So, you know, I went up there like a little puppy dog with his tail. And I stood there and I said, "My name is Stan and I'm an alcoholic." And I didn't mean it. Because at 7 weeks, I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I really didn't know whether I was one. But after a lot of identification, going to open speaker meetings, you know, if it quacks like a duck, and if it rattles like a duck, and it looks like a duck, maybe the damn thing is a duck. And I spoke. And I spoke for 40 minutes, folks, and they ain't shut me up since. And I love it. And I encourage people to speak. In my group, people get up here and say, "I can't speak. I shake. I'm full of nerves." Man, that's not nerves. That's God shaking the truth out of you. And they say, "I get mixed up. I come up here. I'm at the beginning. I'm here and there." Who knows where you're at? Nobody knows where you're at. You don't know where I'm at. I may be at the beginning. And you ladies, oh, you ladies don't want to speak. And we got so many ladies. And they come to me and they say, "Eustachio, I can't speak. I got such a boring story." Do you know how many boring stories that the women are out there waiting for? There's a lot of you waiting for a boring. And it seems like you're all drank the same way. Got up in the morning, put on my house coat with the cigarette burns in them. I went up and pulled down the blinds and I drank. Now, come on, ladies. I drank with some of you gals. I knew there was a lot more action than that. So come on out and tell us about it. Let us know what happened in between those lines. It's great. Then you all love the big book. And I know how you feel about the big book, because my sponsor was a big book man. Anything I wanted to know, he'd say, "Look on page 4, look on page 10, look on this page, look on that page." I asked him what an agnostic and what an atheist was. He said, "Look in the book." I said, "What page?" He says, "You know what else he is?" He said, "He's a man sitting at the Notre Dame and SMU game and he don't know who to root for." Not only that, when he dies, he's all dressed up and he don't know where the hell to go. One day, I said to Phil, I said, "You know, I've been sober 9 months now, and I'm getting a little frisky. I'm 28 years old, I'm separated from my wife, and they keep telling me, don't be looking at the girls." And I said, "Phil, where does it say in his book anything about sex?" Well, Phil didn't like to talk about sex too much. He said, "Don't worry about it, it'll happen, you'll understand." I said, no, I want to know, I want to look. And in his haste, instead of telling me the right page, he says to me, he says, "That's on page 96. Now, we all know that sex is on page 69. Right? Well, I opened up page 96. I couldn't wait to get home. Then I opened up the book, and this is what I read. "Don't be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once." Page 96. "Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness whatever you have to offer." "And we find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man or woman who cannot or will not work with you." If you leave such a person alone, he may soon be convinced that he cannot recover by himself. I picked up the phone. I was tickled pink. Man, is it? I picked up the phone and I said, Phil, I just read page 96 and you're a great guy. He said, what did you read? I'm going to tell you, up until he died, I never let him forget it. I came into the program and I got active. I got active and I did everything that this man told me to do. Believe me. I got into service. I became a delegate. I was at inner group. With inner group, I was able to go to New York. The only two times we had it in the Americana Hotel. And who spoke with Bill? And I went up to Bill and I shook his hand. The impression I got was one thing. Oh my God, what a big hand he's got. And I got a big hand. That's all. The next time I was invited back, because now I was chairman of intergroup dinner, and we sat with Bill at the table. And above all the things that he said to me, I'll never forget one thing. He said, don't turn your back on AA. He said, young people like you are the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, keep coming. He said, take and take and take. Take as much as we can give you. And I went. And I took. And he said, don't you ever forget that you have to give it away. And I remember that. I remember that to this day. And I go and I do and I make a lot of meetings and I help my fellow man as much as I can. And you know, someday I know that I'm going to be up there in that big meeting in the sky. And I know that someday I'm going to have to face that man and he's going to say to me, you know, I gave you an awful lot, young man. What did you do with it? You know, I hope I can look him straight in the eye and I can say, Lord, I gave it all away. I hope I'm leaving a little bit here with you. But if I didn't leave anything with you, when I was at the conference and Milt Maxwell was leaving, I was sitting at the table and I wrote out a little ditty. Somebody had started and I finished it. And it may apply to all of us. And it goes something like this. There's a useful and a highly important task that will not get done unless you do it. And there is a face upon which a smile will not appear unless you help put it there. There are breaking hearts that will not have the courage to try again unless you walk with them. For God has provided no substitute for you. I need no longer to hide from me or from my God. I no longer need to be alone. I no longer need to blame others or to hate or to fear, because there is no need for blame or hate or fear. I am free to be with all my wrongs and all my rights. And I am free because I am one of God's creatures. Creature who I'm loved by. I am free because I stopped hiding and let him come in. So I invite you, come fly with me if you wish. Come share the joy that I have found. Sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. In the meantime, keep God in his hand and AA in this one. And you don't have a hand left to pick up that first drink. Thanks and God bless you.